I was raised as a Christian, whatever that's supposed to mean. I don't know what it means. I grew up in Hendersonville and went to the Hendersonville United Methodist Church there on Church Street. I grew up in that church, and my mother would take all seven of us there every Sunday and every night. So, again, I was raised in a Christian environment. How many of you were raised, would say you were raised, you brought up in a Christian environment? Whatever that means. I mean, what does that mean? What is a Christian? If you ask a Baptist or a Methodist or a Mormon or a Jehovah's Witness or a Pentecostal Holiness or Episcopalian what a Christian is, you'd get that many different answers. Aside from the fact there's no authority to say who's right and who's wrong unless you're Catholic, but even the Catholics disagree because you have Reformed Catholicism and you have Orthodox Catholicism. So nobody can really agree on what that term means. And when I hear someone say, I'm a Christian, you know, in my mind, I go, well, what does that mean? And we can all be thankful that there's no Inquisition around today to test all of us on that question or those who claim to be Christians, because a lot of them, myself included, would probably be burned at the stake. But anyway, growing up as a Christian, there was something about that whole thing that never really set right with me when I became of age to think about what was going on. And I'll use this little analogy to talk about the kind of child that I was. And many of you can probably maybe relate to this. But when I was a kid, I loved to go outdoors and play outdoors. And oftentimes I would play alone. I was kind of a solitary kid at times. I had friends, but you know, I like to play alone. What I like to do most of anything at all was to turn stones in the woods or around the fields. Turn the stones over and see what's underneath them. I loved to explore what was under the stone. Or maybe it was an old log and I would push it over and I would just explore all the life that was under there. I would use that sort of as an analogy to the way I began to approach my Christian upbringing. I wasn't concerned about the surface stuff, you know, the reciting of the creeds every Sunday, just sort of going through the motions, going to church, believing what I was told to believe. I wanted to dig under it. I wanted to see what was under it. I wanted to get beyond the surface of it, to explore it in some sort of depth. And that's sort of been my whole life and what has led me, I believe, to embrace Unitarian Universalism. And I remember one day, though, let me back up just a second. I remember one day taking a walk with my mother after church. At that time, we lived right here on Canuga, not far from here. And as we were walking, she just suddenly stopped and she just said out of the clear blue, "What if all this is not true?" And I was shocked that my mother, who I thought was so devout, was asking this question, what if all this is not true? But it took me a while to realize that experience of my mother asking that question was one of the most liberating moments in my life. Because it said to me, it's okay to question. Let me tell you what a cult is. You know, we Unitarian Universalists get called a cult, and I have a book at home that says Cults in America, and we're in it. And when I was a chaplain at Brevard College and I was exploring becoming a UU minister, I got a letter from a congregant of mine in the Methodist Church, said, you have a cult meeting on your campus, and they're called Unitarian Universalists. Let me tell you what a cult really is, and you probably know this already. A cult is where you're not allowed to question. Remember that. That's the definition of a cult. If you're ever in a group and you're not allowed to question, you're in a cult. And I had a professor friend of mine at Western Carolina. His son, some people came on the campus at Western Carolina, and they recruited him. They got him in, and he was in that. His father came. He said, can you help me get him out of that cult? Why was it a cult? Because he sat down with two of the leaders in that group, and he asked a question, and they got up and walked out. And he said, what's going on here? And they said, you don't ask questions here. That's a cult. The best thing that you and I can ever do for our faith journey is to question it. The best thing you and I can ever do is to question all of that. Think of the word question. If you drop the last part, it's quest. The minute you ask the question, you're on the quest. Life is an adventure. Life is an odyssey. Life is a pilgrimage. Life is a journey. Sometimes the journey has a distance, and sometimes the journey doesn't have a distance. You can sit in your own living room chair and be on the quest. You don't have to go out and do deeds and slay monsters and dragons. You can sit alone, quietly, and be on the quest the moment you ask the question. And that's what I love about Unitarian Universalism. In Shelley Denham's hymn, you know the hymn, to question is the answer. I love that hymn, to question is the answer. So, that other thing I like about UU, that other little slogan, we don't stand, we move. We don't stand for anything, we move. We move. So what if it's all not true? What if it's all not true? Well, I pondered that question that my mother asked. I think, well, if we don't know the implications of what we believe in, if we don't know the implications of it being not true, then how do we know the implications of it if it were true? If we don't explore that question, what if it's all not true? Is truth something that you can put on a piece of paper with ink? In other words, does truth come in the form of a propositional phrase or a dogma or a doctrine that you can write on a piece of paper? Well, in my reading of Campbell and Jung, I came to realize that truth is living and dynamic. What if the truth is you? What if you are the truth? What if the way you are living your own life is the truth? And what if you are the truth that anyone on this planet may ever come to know because of the way you're living your life? You know, to thine own self be true. Or what if the truth is not something that it comes to us in a literal way, but maybe in a symbolic way? And as Joan just reminded us, and several of you others, we just celebrated Christmas. And I love the Christmas carols. But I found myself asking for the first time in my life, I'm 65 years old, I started listening to the words. One of my favorite Christmas carols is Joy to the World. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Let earth receive her king. He rules the world with truth and grace, and the nations prove. Then my wife and I went to the Transylvania Choral Society's rendition of Handel's Messiah, where they sang, "And he shall reign forever and ever." And I found myself just saying, well, so what? What does that mean? He rules the world with truth and grace. Let me tell you this. 2,000 years of Christianity, and we're in perpetual war. You can't tell me this nation believes in peace. And I don't know how people can say this is a Christian nation. That just to me is a stark contradiction. You know, all those words, they sound good. I love the Christmas carols. But to me, they're just empty. They don't mean anything when you think about them. But then I thought, well, you know, there are at least two carols that address this situation, this disturbing reality. And we have them in our hymnal. The first one is the carol by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. It's from a poem he wrote. I heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat, peace on earth, goodwill to men. And in despair I bowed my head, there's no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong, that what? Mocks the song of peace on earth. I mean, there's this constant mocking of our ideals. Our ideals are mocked. The other hymn was, it came upon a midnight clear, and it is verse 3. But with the woes of war and strife, the world has suffered long, beneath the angel's strain has rolled 2,000 years of wrong. Now, to me, these carols are willing to face a really disturbing question. All this talk about joy to the world and Christ will reign forever, and so what? Does it mean anything at all? So I found myself asking these questions about religion, Christianity in particular. Carl Hume wrote in 1963, quote, "Think of nearly 2,000 years of Christian ideals followed instead of peace on earth by a world war among Christian nations with its barbed wire and poison gas." Reminded me of a poster that someone once gave me, and the caption read, "A modest proposal for peace. Let the Christians of the world stop killing each other." I think it's just so absurd that we believe that we can create peace through violence. Martin Luther King told us that over and over and over. Violence will never create peace. So I said to myself, something's wrong with this picture, and it's not just the passage of 2,000 years. Somewhere along the way, we got something wrong. We took a wrong turn. We interpreted the message in a wrong way. And I think that we've been getting it wrong ever since, and we're still getting it wrong. Now, I realize the subject of Christmas is, of course, Jesus Christ. And I know that that's controversial among Unitarian Universalists, and it ought to be that way. And it's a good thing that it's that way. Jesus Christ ought to be controversial. Sometimes it goes further than that, though. When I was exploring making the switch from United Methodism to Unitarian Universalist, there was a visiting professor at Brevard College who was a Unitarian Universalist, and we got into this discussion about the use of the G word, you know, how controversial the G word is sometimes. And she said, "Well, back in my congregation, we don't even use the J word." And I thought to myself, well, I'm not really sure this is something I want to get into, because I'm not so sure that we should be proud of that with our professions of being open-minded and accepting of one another. And I think that attitude, in my opinion, does a lot more harm than good to our movement. But my question was, how do we Unitarian Universalists relate to that figure, Jesus Christ, without feeling as if we're compromising our commitment to religious pluralism, our commitment to reason and tolerance and spiritual freedom? Can we interpret the Christ figure in a way that promotes our seven principles? Well, I believe that we can. It's said that Jesus is the reason for the season, but I think maybe we should think about this being the season for reason, that we think about these things critically. So Jesus Christ ought to be controversial. We ought to be asking ourselves about what that word means. When I was teaching Old and New Testament at the college, I would tell my students, you know, Christ is not Jesus' last name. I mean, his father wasn't Joe Christ. It's not a surname. It's a designation that came to him, and exactly when it came to him is not even clear in the Gospels. According to the Gospel of Mark, he became the Christ at his baptism. According to the Gospel of Matthew, he became the Christ at his birth. According to the Gospel of Luke, he became the Christ when he was in Mary's womb. And then you get to the Gospel of John, that weird, strange Gospel. And John puts it back at the beginning of creation. In the beginning was the Word. He uses a Greek concept, logos. Jesus was the eternal, Christ is the eternal logos. And Christ Jesus was a manifestation of the eternal logos. So it's never clear, even in Scripture, as to when he became the Christ. Some of our carols put his birth date, time-wise, at the winter solstice, the birth of the new sun. Now, we all know that. But Christ is a symbol, not a sign. And we need to know the difference between a symbol and a sign. And I'm going to tell you what that difference is. So a man is driving his car, and he comes to a stop sign, and he rolls past. You know, he runs the stop sign. And a cop pulls him over, and he says to the cop, "Well, I slowed down." And the cop pulls out his billy club and says, "If I started hitting you on the head with this, would you say to me, stop or slow down?" So a stop sign means exactly what it says. It points to itself. And you don't have to ponder, what does this mean? It's exactly what it means. Stop means stop. Now, you could turn stop into a symbol. It's just the way you want to approach it. You could say, does anything ever really come to a complete standstill and stop? No, it doesn't. Everything is in motion constantly. So you could tell the cop that, you know, well, everything is in motion all the time, so how can I stop? But I wouldn't try that if I were you. But the difference between a sign and a symbol is an attitude. And the attitude is that, well, I know everything and I'm certain about everything and I know exactly what it is. That's, you're living in a world of signs, but you can turn everything into a symbol. Every word can be a symbol. A symbol doesn't point to itself, it points away from itself. A symbol reveals a meaning and conceals a mystery. So it's just a simple, all you have to do is just change your attitude and you begin to see the whole world can be symbolic when you open up to the awe and the mystery of it all. Our language could be all symbols if we stop thinking we know everything. So Christ is a symbol. It doesn't point to itself, it points away from itself. You know, the Buddhists have a little thing about the finger pointing to the moon, and people want to grab the finger and say, oh, this is it, this is it, this is it, this is it. We say, no, this is pointing to something else. That is what you need to be looking at. So Christ, not pointing to himself, pointing away from himself, the question is, what's the final reference? And I'm going to give you my answer, and you can come up with your own answer, and that's hunky-dory, and you know, you use circles. But my answer to the question is, he's pointing to you and me. Christ is the reference. The end point is to you and me. And his greatest teaching to this universe, to you and me, was that you are the light. And the question is, can you accept that? When everybody tells you you're no good, you're worthless, there's no light in you, you're all dark, especially the Apostle Paul with his original sin stuff. You're corrupt at birth. If you're John, if you're raised in the Presbyterian, maybe you heard Calvinism, you're rotten at the core. Well, I don't know how you reconcile that doctrine with what Jesus teaches. You are the light. Don't look at me. But see, I think for us humans, it's hard to accept that responsibility that I bear the light within me. Because when I bear the light within me, I bear the power within me. It's my responsibility to let it shine. Jesus told another parable where he said, you have a talent, and you have a talent, and you have a talent, and I'm giving you these talents. And two of the people use their talent. The third, what does he do with it? He buries it because he was afraid. Let me tell you this. Fear is the number one obstacle to our letting our light shine and being our light. And you know, all of our ideals, peace, justice, love, compassion, if they're not here, how do we expect them to be in the world? How do we expect the world to be peaceful if we're not peaceful? And let me tell you this. Christmas is becoming one of the most violent days of the year. You know, people fighting over a Christmas gift. Can you imagine that? Fighting over a Christmas gift. Pulling out guns and shooting over Christmas gifts. Christmas has become a violent time of year for a lot of people. So if we don't have it here, it's not going to be there. I love what Dietrich Bonhoeffer said. We don't live at the center, we live from the center. But we need to find that center. We need to find that self. And you can call it self. You can call it Christ. You can call it Buddha. You can call it Atman. Or my favorite one is Oversoul, Emerson. Our reading of, 531, Emerson, the Oversoul. That's another thing I love about UU. We don't get all hung up on any specific language or terminology. Jesus was a puzzle the moment he appeared, and he remained a puzzle, and he remained a puzzle throughout time because they couldn't fit him in a category. Was he priest? Was he prophet? Was he king? And even, you know, the historical quest for Jesus, they don't know what category to put him in. Was he a wisdom teacher? Was he a cynic? Was he apocalyptic prophet? What was he? Well, the reason we have such a hard time with that is because Jesus was an individual. And that's what we are to be, an individual. Now, there's a difference between individuality and individualism. The word individual simply means one, undivided. That's what it means, undivided. So when you're an individual and you're living out of your own center, you're undivided. You're not divided against yourself. You're one, you're whole. And that's what that word means. Okay, I'm getting on with it because I think we're running out of time, and some of you may have a ham in the oven at home cooking. So find your center, live from that. You are the light. His greatest teaching, his message, the Christmas message, you are the light. You are the child born in you. You are the peace, you are the joy, you are the love. Because all of the peace, joy, and love contained in this world at any moment is contained in the individuals. You know, there's a saying I love, be the change that you expect and that you want in the world. Be the change you expect in the world. We have the power to shape and mold not only our lives, but the world we live in when we live from this center. It's not a question of what would Jesus do. It's a question of what I do if I was living my own true authentic life and not somebody else's life. You know, Jesus defied his mother. That's pretty heavy. I remember a guy in seminary. I'm wrapping it up, seriously. I remember this guy in seminary who was older. He was a little bit older. And I remember he cried. And I'd never seen, hardly ever seen older men cry. And he was leaving seminary. And he said to me, he said, I'm leaving seminary because God didn't call me, my mother did. And he was defying his mother. Okay, think about it. Jesus defied his mother. He defied every attempt to institutionalize him. Couldn't put him in a box. And again, why? Because he was living out of his own authentic self, being an individual. Not an ego trip. So there's a difference between living out of your individuality and individualism. There's a difference, and it's too bad that we use the same term, because it's not about ego. It's about finding your higher self, communicating with your higher self, being in touch with your higher self. And for me, that's what prayer means. Prayer just means talking to my higher self. Okay, so let me wrap it up by going back around to where we began. Beneath the angel's strain has rolled 2,000 years of wrong. Well, it's not 2,000 years of wrong, in my opinion. It's 2,000 years of getting the message wrong, of turning Christmas into one big consumer holiday. 2,000 years of the message, peace on earth to all goodwill, but that has to start within every human heart. So you are it. You are the light. Trust yourself. Trust yourself. Trust your heart to guide you. You are the light, and you may be the only light that anyone around you sees. Thank you.